Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
On this episode of The Mincing Rascals, the Rascals discuss Tribune's new corporate name, Tronk. No, I'm serious. Tronk. The Hillary speech versus the Trump speech. And the fact that Illinois doesn't have a tax problem. What they have is a pension problem.
Today is Friday. It's June 3rd, 2016. I'm John Williams. These are The Mincing Rascals. It's our weekly podcast. You can hear this podcast broadcast Saturdays at 1:30, by the way. I'm on from 1 to 3 on the Saturdays on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
And I'm Eric Zorn, legendary columnist for the Chicago Tribune.
Tronk.
I was about to say, so none of you build yourselves as Tronksters, T-R-O-N-C, all small letters, in kind of a Mary Tyler Moore palette. Tronk is now the new name of the corporation that owns the Chicago Tribune. Am I right about that?
Yes, and we are to be, the memo to the staff says we are to be curating content and creating content and monetizing.
Yeah, I read that email or memo to the staff, and I didn't know exactly what it meant. Tribune, Tronk, T-R-O-N-C, all small letters for some reason, stands for Tribune Online Content. Is that right?
Can I say that online you guys are still using or capitalizing Tronk? Because I read a story on it today in the business section.
Heads will roll, Steve. Yeah.
Big news.
It's kind of, I just saw a description of the word Tronk, and it was... it was like guttural. You know, it's like it sounds like a sneeze or something like that.
There's some good things on Twitter about it. Someone says Tronk, things that Tronk sounds like more than a media company. One is a strain of marijuana. Two is part of a steam engine. And three is a 17th century musical instrument. I think it would air on my Tronk.
Sounds like a caveman to me for some reason.
So the name has changed. Do you guys have any expectation as to what that means to the newspaper?
No. Expectation is probably the wrong word.
How about we focus on good journalism, content, getting more readers, just the idea that our marketing, we have a marketing arm that, you know, spent all this time probably rolling out this product that I think it's changed on the NASDAQ, right? It's
official. T-R-N-C. Yeah, you've gone from the NYSE to the NASDAQ, and your symbol is T-R-N-C. Capital letters there, by the way, so you got that going for you.
Someone else says it sounds like the latest Palin family pregnancy.
Okay, well, so that's all you have for us, Eric?
Well,
we can move on.
It's all I've got from Twitter. I will say that, you know, Kristen is right. I mean, what we do in the trenches where we are is we try to write and analyze and do the best we can the same way we always have. And we just hope that our corporate overlords are doing things that make it easier for them to make money and for them to keep employing us. I don't think that it's going to change what we do much in the editorial opinion area. And also, I think in the newsroom, I think you're going to keep doing what they do, at least for the near future. And we don't even know who's going to be owning us, right? Because there's this big other battle going on. The Gannett newspaper chain wants to buy the Tribune from Michael Farrow, and Farrow doesn't want to let the Tribune buy
it. And Gannett hasn't stopped, right? They were harping after the shareholders meeting yesterday.
Right, and some of our shareholders are suing our current board for not being behaving in a fiduciarily responsible way, however you say that. But it's a very interesting time for us.
I read the email to staff, and it was just so filled with gobbledygook. I read it a couple times and I didn't know what they were saying, and I thought, do you guys realize what a parody of a corporate memo this corporate memo is? It had all of those catchphrases that mean very little to anybody.
Yeah, I don't read them.
Okay. Let's talk about Hillary Clinton's speech today. Today, let's talk about Hillary Clinton's speech a couple of days ago in San Diego. I think it's the first shot across the bow of the SS Donald Trump. I mean, she's been playing patty cake with Trump and every now and then saying things like he's not qualified. But now she just delivered. She said he's dangerously incoherent. She said his are not even ideas. They're just a bizarre series of rants and lies. He's not just unprepared. She she said, he's temperamentally unfit for the job. She said, this man should not have the nuclear codes. He'd lead us to war just because someone got under his very thin skin. And she went on like that. Kristen, what did you think about Hillary Clinton's speech? Is it a game changer?
I kind of felt like it was. I did watch it. It was not as heavy on foreign policy as I was expecting or that her team kind of pitched it to be. But I mean, she really, it reminded me of the Mitt Romney speech when Romney kind of laid out all of the various shortcomings of Donald Trump. I mean, she really nailed him a couple of times saying that, you know, ask him about foreign policy. His experience is based on his term overseeing the Miss Universe pageant. And, you know, he spouts out on Twitter. He's probably doing it right now. And in fact, he was. So I thought it was pretty effective at courting those people who are in the middle and unsure. If she keeps hammering this theme home, I think he's going to have a lot of trouble.
It was a really good speech. I thought it was like the Elizabeth Warren broadside that she delivered a couple weeks ago, which was very strong. Hillary Clinton had not been that strong yet about Trump. And, you know, all those quotes you said were quite true, John. And I also thought that she was raising what's going to be a really important question on the minds of voters, which is like, if you know, your neighbors, your sons, your daughters, do you want them marching off to war because this guy is so thin-skinned that he gets angry at something that someone says or does on the international scene, that just doesn't seem temperamentally fit to be the president?
I thought one of the most effective things was the tone of it. And I don't have a good – I'm interested in how you guys would describe the tone. I don't have a good word for it, but it wasn't accusatory. It wasn't really patronizing. It was sort of – it wasn't bland by any means.
It
but
was
she,
measured.
Measured? Okay, yeah.
Drunk. She,
it was true.
Aaron, you have to stop that now.
Let's see if we can drop it in the podcast like 10 Trump, times. All right.
That's,
I think we're up to 5.
Measured is maybe a good word because, you know, that's a good word. It was because it was very effective just by stating the facts of it all, I guess.
It was witty, too. Like she was witty at times. And I mean, there were cutaways to the audience where people were laughing and you sort of felt like she was doing stand up.
Well,
in
some of those laughs, I'm thinking, you guys, this isn't that funny. It wasn't meant to be that funny.
Right. You know? Well, and I think she had the right tone between playing to the crowd and not playing to the crowd. Like she knew some of those things would elicit a reaction, but I think her message was so serious, she didn't go too far down the let's make fun of Donald Trump road. That wasn't what the purpose of this speech was. It was more like a warning. Hey, everybody, we've got to take this seriously.
And she
laid it out.
And his response was not serious. And this is what baffles me. This is the time for Donald Trump to have changed his tone and his direction to try to win this general election, to answer a serious political attack like that with a serious political defense of his own and perhaps followed by an attack. He tweeted, he says, reading poorly from the teleprompter, she doesn't even look presidential. Crooked Hillary no longer has credibility. Too much failure in office. That's not a response. That's just a...
And she made a point of, you know, he's the guy, she said at one point, I wonder if he even realized he's talking about nuclear war when he was talking about the conflict between Japan and North Korea, I think it was. And then he brought up during his speech later that night about I'll have my finger on the button. And he sort of fell right into what she was saying. He was kind of raving like a lunatic talking about nuclear war.
You're right, Stephen. I think you made an interesting point. You said, think about Hillary's tone. I think that was the best thing about her speech. And then Trump in San Jose that night, the same time the Golden State Warriors are playing in California, the Oklahoma City Thunder for game one of the NBA championship.
No. The Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, shoot, yeah. Tell who I was rooting for. So they're playing the Cavaliers. And he knows that people are into that, and yet he's got this big crowd. And so he is raving like a madman. He was angry and loud, and I think his tone in that speech hurt him as much as anything. We've heard him say these things before, but he was ticked. You could really tell it.
And outside the thing, this is really bothering me, outside this speech of Trump, his rally, you had anti-Trump protesters who were throwing eggs at and surrounding and taunting and threatening Trump supporters.
And punching in the back of the head.
And punching. And it's just horrible and it's stupid. I mean, and it's unproductive. It's counterproductive. And I did a column earlier this week about an incident up at DePaul where I just feel like, you know, I understand that liberals are angry and concerned. And I'm a liberal and I'm angry and concerned. But the way to counter that is not to try to shut people up or punch them or throw eggs at them. And
well, remember earlier in this podcast when Trump rallies were described as disgusting displays? And soon after almost every Trump rally, it's Bernie Sanders now tweeting out saying, you know, please calm down, cut the violence. You have those protesters overturning police cars and doing, like you're saying, throwing eggs. So I'm just pointing that out.
No, you're right. There's a slight difference that the violence at the Trump rallies are coming outside the anti-Trump people now. Right. They're beating up on supporters outside, not inside.
I think it's both. Well, I mean, there have been numerous cases as the primaries have moved to different states where this has occurred.
Well, isn't the point it's not fair to characterize the violence at Trump rallies inside or outside the venues as a product of the Trump people? It's the people that don't like Trump who are upsetting these things?
Yeah, they're hurting their own cause.
Right. Steve's exactly right. They're hurting their own cause.
It's disgusting. I mean, the pictures of that woman with egg in her hair from California, it's just awful.
It's like a commercial for Trump. It really is.
It doesn't seem to hurt him, although he goes after the Washington Post and the New York Times in his rant yesterday, the terrible newspapers, a reporter from ABC is a sleaze. Donald Trump this week also defended his donations to veterans. He made $5.6 million, or money he raised to the tune of $5.6 million, was given to veterans groups, and then he listed them all out, and he said, look, I'm the only guy in history who's been criticized for raising money and giving it to veterans. What was your reaction to his defense of that, guys?
I mean, he gave the money out after he was called on the carpet by the Washington Post. So, I mean, do I think sometimes the coverage of him is over the top? Yes. But it was a very legitimate story to say, hey, you know what? Let's check back from January when he skipped a debate and instead held a rally and raised money for veterans groups. Totally legit for reporters to want to track, you know, what actually happened to that money.
He's completely detached from reality, this man. I mean, he truly is. He's holding this news conference and he's saying, well, I wanted this money to go privately. You know, this is a private thing. You don't need to know. This doesn't have to be revealed. It was the most public of all things. I mean, he skips this Megyn Kelly debate, says I'm going to raise millions. He made it public. And then he questions the fact that as a guy running for president.
And he was tweeting about it.
So he's politicizing it himself, advancing his own aims himself, and then bristles when he's expected to make an accounting for the money.
And the answer to that is not a news conference where you call reporters' names.
No.
The answer is a press release with a spreadsheet saying, here's our donations. Next question, please.
Right.
But did anybody think that he wasn't going to give it? I mean, at the end of the day, Donald Trump raised money for veterans and gave it
to
veterans.
Yeah, I don't think he would have given it if, as Kristen pointed out, they called him on it.
Very cynical.
They
Eric.
Did that story. He raised that debate was what, January?
You don't think it wasn't going to come up?
No,
that's different, John. Are you saying, but without pressure, would he have given that money? And I don't think he was holding on to it to use the money elsewhere. I don't think it mattered to him. He got what he got out of the fundraiser. He got his politics out of it. It was out of his mind. So, yeah, I don't think there was any vetting, as he said, to find the right sort of charities to give the money to. It was off the table.
I got the feeling that process had started, and I almost don't blame him, you know, the candidate, but this is something that obviously your campaign should be careful about who you're giving money to. A lot of these veterans groups are dishonest. You can go to the charity websites and see that for yourself and how much they spend on administration. So, I mean, there could be some truth to the fact that they wanted to make sure the money would actually trickle down to vets. And I thought he did release some of it. It was his own $1 million contribution that he hadn't given. And then, you know, some others that he did not release until the Post. And you know what else? This could have been an example where he says, you know, I'm really sorry this slipped through the cracks. We caught up on the money. Here it is. Instead of that thin-skinned mentality that Hillary Clinton
talked
about.
And one of the reporters said during the news conference after he'd called Schutto a sleaze, said, is this what your
the
presidential...
ABC reporter,
yeah,
right?
The ABC, Jim Schutto. Is this what your you're going to be like as president? And he said, yeah.
Said yes.
Yeah.
Well, I thought the media was showing its colors a little bit on that one, though, because the man raised money, gave it to veterans, didn't give it as timely as maybe some of us would have liked him to. So there was motivation for him now after the Washington Post story.
You're giving him a complete pass, John.
What's wrong with asking him the question? I mean, it wasn't like they were camped out in front of his house shouting at him in the bullhorn. They asked a perfectly legitimate question. They ran the story when they didn't get an answer.
Look at it this way, John. So he says he's going to spend $6 million, raise $6 million. He doesn't allocate the money. The Washington Post runs a story saying he hadn't allocated the money. The next day, he allocates the money and then has a news conference ripping reporters for snooping into his business.
Yeah.
Come on.
Do you think there has been equal time or attention given to the Clinton Foundation? And I'm just throwing this out there, but I could see where, you know, this is some money that he raised for veterans groups. You have, you know, not conservative publications, liberal publications over the past year tracking all this money that went back and forth between that were donations from countries like Algeria giving to the Clinton Foundation and then the State Department approving larger than normal arms sales. Again, Dave Serrata, a Democratic consultant, reporter, writer now for wrote this in Salon. So I'm not quoting National Review or something here. But do you think there is a legitimate question on the Trump side that kind of story on Hillary Clinton does not get the same amount of attention?
I'll say yes.
I think so, too. It did get a lot of play early on. I'm trying to remember.
Was that a year ago
in the Democratic primaries or where was that getting its play?
Well, see, you're proving my point. It's not. So
no, but it did about a year ago.
Somebody did a whole book on it, though.
About a year ago.
Who was interviewed quite a bit, but it was a while ago. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah,
I agree with you. The other part of it is this: the Trump thing is so much easier to understand.
Easier to digest.
Yeah, right.
Money,
but
not money,
far less
problem.
Serious. Far less serious than what has been alleged about her. And
I think you're absolutely right about that. I think this... you know what? And I actually can't go down that Clinton road that well because while I know about it, I've never been that motivated to fully explore it, and it's always felt pretty partisan to me. But maybe it's not. Maybe there's more there than I've come to know, you know?
Read Dave Serrata's piece.
I will. Let's talk now about what's going on in Springfield in the state of Illinois. Eric Zorn, at the end of your column today, you wrote, "The Civic Federation, a generally conservative, business-friendly institution, earlier this year released a roadmap for extricating ourselves from the excrement that includes raising income taxes, broadening the sales tax base, amending the Constitution to limit the pension protection clause, and imposing agency spending limits to eliminate a perilous backlog in bills. Each element is politically difficult. Passing any of them will require brutal honesty. Get out the plunger, folks. It's looking like a long, steamy summer." I thought it was a very interesting article you wrote today, pointing out that the problem hasn't been taxes being too high in Illinois.
Yeah. I mean, basically, my column was based on Bruce Rauner saying that the Democrats have spent Illinois into the toilet over the last 30 years. And I point out that Republicans have been governors for 18 of the last 30 years, and yet Democrats have had majorities in both houses for 20 of those years. So this is really a bipartisan problem, and as we've discussed a lot, the big part of it is that we have borrowed tomorrow's money in form of stealing from the pension funds, essentially.
Well, but you ranked Illinois compared to other states, and you pointed out time and again that per capita, et cetera, per GDP, we actually don't tax as much as other states. Yeah. I would have figured we were the highest taxing state in the nation.
You know what? It depends on what you're looking at. I mean, Eric pulled a couple statistics. I could pull some, too, that say the exact opposite. So we do have a low state income tax compared to other states, but we make up for that in many ways in property tax and sales taxes.
Right. But property taxes are local. And they're not state. I mean, you can't blame Mike Madigan for local property taxes. You can't blame Mike Madigan for the 4% extra sales tax you pay in Chicago. Kristen is absolutely right with it. When you add property taxes in, but one of the reasons that property taxes are high is because the state has not funded, given its share of education funding. It's supposed to fund half of education. It doesn't come anywhere close.
I'm not saying
that Illinois a resident of Illinois feels this is a low tax state. I'm saying that if you're looking at the legislature, you're looking at the source of these problems and where it comes from, it's not because we've got these luxurious programs that our spending on core services is high, particularly high. That's not the problem. The problem is we've got this enormous debt that we have built up basically because of our failure to deal with a pension obligation, and that to deal with this, and the Civic Federation is a pretty honest broker.
I would point out that over the 12 years that Democrats had total control of state government, when we did borrow against the pensions and took total holidays for 2 years in a row, Republicans put no votes on that. They balked about it, they kicked and screamed, and the Democrats jammed it through. Oh. So I know you want this to be bipartisan, but the unfunded pension liability has doubled over the time that the Democrats were down there in Springfield. I don't see how you can really make the last 12 years a bipartisan debacle.
Well, one reason it's doubled is because the pension ramp that we put in place in the 90s, it had all these out years where the obligation is greater and greater and greater as we go forward.
Well, right, which the Democrats also signed off on.
They signed
I was
off
down
on.
There when they passed that, and I remember looking at 2012 and thinking, oh, wow, there's no way they're going to be able to make that
that's
payment.
Kind of the original.
So then they just didn't. They never made the payment. They changed the ramp because they couldn't make the payments.
Because our
rather
lawmakers,
than deal with, you know, the real core problem like New York, which has seven different pension systems, a seven-tiered pension system. They've continually ratcheted down benefits for new workers, and we never did that. We just kept ignoring it.
Yeah, right. And the reason is because we don't want to raise taxes or cut spending. And it was easy to kind of keep going for a while, saying, "Look, we have a surplus. We're going to take pension holidays. We're going to give you what you want. We're going to give you the state government you want, but we're not going to have you pay for it. We're going to give you."
Well, how did we ever assume that we were going to have the money to eventually catch up?
We didn't. We really didn't.
We just thought business was going to get better and we generate more taxes from improved economy and
that
sort of thing?
They just don't think that way. They live year to year. They pass yearly budgets.
Well, they live election to election.
Sure.
More year to year, yeah.
But also the tax hikes, I mean, what I point out in my column today is that a lot of the tax hikes proposals that have been on the table were blocked by the Democrat supermajority legislature. You can't keep blaming Rauner. It's not like he vetoed something that got to his desk. They can't even get it to his desk. I mean, the graduated income tax proposal that everybody talks about as being the panacea of everything to get it on the ballot, it was the Democrats who didn't vote on it. They didn't even call it in the House.
Yep.
So anyway.
When I get to be king, you will not be able to borrow against those pension funds. You will not be. You will have to fund. How we ever allow? Doesn't that sound illegal? How can you do that? How can you have a pension obligation and then not make the pension payments? That's what's been happening, right?
Yep.
Okay. Welcome to Illinois. Let's talk briefly about the most important issue of the day, and that is the elevated subway in Chicago. Steve, how do you print or write that?
It's the L-E-L. Who do those people think they are?
Yeah.
Who do those people think they are, John?
The CTA spells it. I mean, and I agree with Steve, and I guess Kristen is saying, yeah, the E-L is the way I've always thought of it, and that's the way I would spell it. But the CTA spells it just L in inside quotes.
And
a
the
capital.
New AP-style book Trump. Says it'll be capital. At least it could be a little L.
So the AP-style book comes out, and they say refer to it as
L.
L, not E.
We're ignoring that, I
Correct.
Hope, in the newsroom.
It's short for elevated train, right?
Right.
So L is not L, E-L, elevated
train,
Come on,
Eric,
right?
Give it the times. It's snappy. You get it, L. It's like an emoji.
It's like disco typeface.
Eric, being in radio, I only read the first two lines of every sentence, so I did not know that the CTA spells it and refers to it as just the L.
Yes.
So that gives the AP a little cover.
See, this is the sort of depth that I can add
as a
content aggregator for Trunk.
I mean, you got to monetize that somehow.
we're going to get in trouble.
It's amazing to me that the Associated Press can. And who are the? Is it? It must be. Is it a local committee coming up with this? Or
I don't think so. I don't know. That's a good question.
That they can take the way.
Who are these?
A
deciders?
Region refers to something and change it. Now again, if the CTA calls it the L, I guess I get it, but.
It's like a company coming in and changing the name of a company under the noses of the
Kristen
people who work there.
Right.
Can't be done.
It'd be like adding Velveeta to a Philly steak or something. I mean, you can't just change what a region does.
And one thing the new AP style book did when the Tribune has adopted this also is we stopped capitalizing the word internet.
Oh, I always capitalize the internet with an I, and I always
you're
feel
wrong.
That's
gone.
And World Wide Web, I think we always say what did we, now it's not cap, website. We used to say web capital, two words, website.
We used to not say, but we wouldn't say the word blog. We had, it had to be weblog, W-E-B-L-O-G.
Okay, so back up, because I always capitalized internet and felt kind of highfalutin doing it, because, and I didn't know why that was capitalized.
Until Wednesday, you were correct, and now you're incorrect.
And now it's small I, small and if I. You're going to spell World Wide Web, those are little W's now instead
correct.
Of capital.
I believe so.
Not that any, every now and then you'll hear somebody give a website, and they'll say, okay, www,
right.
and you say, stop
it's
that.
Grandpa.
I hope it, I hope if you're spelling World Wide Web, it's a satirical piece. Because
I haven't typed that in forever.
Is this the information superhighway we're talking about?
Can't they just make it a little W and a wink, you know, right. like, you know what I mean?
Let's check with Al Gore. He invented it.
All right, let's close with our recommendations for the week, guys, unless there's some other topic you want to get to before we wrap this up. Eric, you're the keeper of the clock over there. Are we ready for our recommendations?
We are ready to go, and I'll start. I thought we were supposed to bring in drink recipes this week, so
well,
I brought
I can...
in a well, I'll just say I'll do mine this week, and if
okay,
anyone
I've got my
did,
pen and paper
if anyone
go ahead.
Didn't do this, it's the John Daly. And you know the you know what an
nice.
Arnold you know what an,
Arnold, like an Arnold Palmer
you know what
yeah.
an Arnold Palmer is? An Arnold Palmer is half iced tea and half lemonade. And John Daly, who is on the PGA Tour, is a legendary drunk. The John Daly is one. And a, it's on a take a 11 ounce glass, 14 ounces if you're Kristen.
16.
And 1.5 ounces of vodka, 1/4 ounce of triple sec, and then you fill the rest with half lemonade and half iced tea.
You know what is so funny? I have seen that on drink menus around Chicago, and I thought it was named after John Daly, the brother of Mayor Daly, the Cook County Commissioner John Daly.
Because you only drink on the South Side.
Because I don't follow yeah. golf, I guess. This is named after a golfer.
Golfer,
okay.
yes.
Sorry.
So 1.5
Dissolute
ounces
golfer.
Vodka, 1/4 ounce of triple sec.
1 1/4, then... yeah. 1 1/4 ounce vodka, 1/4 ounce triple sec. And then lemonade, iced tea, and then garnish with, of course, a
lemonade,
lemon
garnish.
Wheel.
So I'm bringing the intellect this week,
nothing
boys.
New here.
Bring it.
I just started reading Cuba's Baseball Defectors by Peter Bjarkman. Bjarkman? I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but it's really interesting. He has studied this for 30 years. So, of course, it touches on Jose Abreu, my White Sox player, and how he got here, but it just tells the whole story of Cuba's economy, what we did to suppress it, the baseball system there, how these players are you know, considered such traitors when they leave and come here, but how dependent we've become on them for Major League Baseball. So it's a very good book, Cuba's Baseball Defectors.
Okay, so mine's sort of sports related as well. You know, Muhammad Ali is ill, and he's in a hospital, and there's some reporting that he might be very ill. We don't know yet. So in getting ready for that, I was listening to some things this morning, and online there is an interview from 1977 with Muhammad Ali and Roy Leonard from WGN Radio, and I think people should listen to it. It takes you back, you know, first of all to the 70s, to 70s radio, to Roy Leonard radio, and then to this great, playful, pensive Muhammad Ali. You can find it if you just Google Roy Leonard, WGN, Muhammad Ali, it'll pop up. But, you know, there's at one point there's this kid who calls, like a kid named Jimmy in 1977 who wants to say hi to the champ. And Muhammad Ali starts talking to him in this falsetto voice and says, this isn't Muhammad, this is a woman. You know, and another woman from the Southwest Side calls him Muhammad, you know, and talks to him. And the guy is just very graceful, very thoughtful, and very funny. And, you know, we absorb these things too much after people die. So why don't we enjoy it a little bit now while Muhammad Ali's still alive?
And he's been such a shell of his former self for so long with the Parkinson's that he's been right. battling for decades.
It's just great. It's just a great thing to listen to. He had so much fun being there.
Hmm. Yeah, what a nice story, Steve. Interesting. My recommendation is something I haven't seen yet.
I'll go for that.
That's half of mine.
I'm recommending the movie The Lobster. Has
oh,
anybody heard about this?
We almost went to see it last weekend.
I'm so going to see this. It's John C. Reilly, Rachel Weisz, some other stars whose names you know. But here's the premise. It's a society where if you are not in love, you have 45 days to find love again. I haven't seen the movie exactly, but it goes like this. And if you don't, then you are turned into the animal of your choosing. And so he's sitting in kind of a clinical setting in like a dorm room, and there's a woman sitting there, and she says, and what will you be if, what will we turn you into if you don't find love? And he said, a lobster, and she says, excellent choice. And then he tries to escape from this society because he doesn't like his options, and he meets a woman, and now he maybe does find love. It's kind of ironic, and it's really bizarre, kind of a dark comedy. Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 90, but I noticed last week it made under $2 million at the box office. So the movie's called The Lobster, and maybe it's not good, but I'm recommending that we all go see it.
Even though you haven't seen it yourself.
Okay. No, but I think it's a great movie.
Well, since you haven't, since you haven't seen it, I'm gonna guess that he finds love in the end.
Well, I don't know. And what kind of an end does a lobster have?
John,
I don't
gives
have
it two claws up.
All right, that wraps up this edition of The Mincing Rascals. This is John Williams. Thank you, Steve Bertrand.
See you, Johnny.
Eric Zorn, all small case, and Rachel and Kristen McQuarrie. Our producer is Kristen Decker. And thank you, Bob Ferguson, our engineer. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!